Wisconsin's 67th State Assembly District has been in Republican hands for going on 6 years now, but the man who has held that seat will not seek re-election. Tom Larson announced he's retiring from state politics at the end of this year, opening up his district to a wide berth of candidates. Two Democrats and four Republicans have managed to get their names on the ballots for next week's state partisan primary election. Today on the West Side, we'll meet those four Republicans and ask them why they feel it should be them representing the 67th State Assembly District of Western Wisconsin. This is the West Side. For reference, the 67th State Assembly District covers nearly all of Chippewa County and nearly the western half of Dunn County. From east to west, a sampling of the cities, towns, and villages include Ridgeland, Wheeler, Colfax, Sand Creek, Elk Mound, New Auburn, Bloomer, Chippewa Falls, Jim Falls, Cornell, Cadott, and Holcomb. I'm sure I'm forgetting more than a few there. But next Tuesday, August 9th, the field will be narrowed down from 6 to 2, with a Democrat and a Republican poised to take the general election this fall. The winners of the 67th State Assembly primary election will come back to the West Side to face their opponent in a one-on-one candidate forum on Halloween, October 31st. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'd like to welcome our Republican candidates that are joining me all in the studio this hour in no particular order. First, I'd like to welcome Travis Hakes. Travis Hakes is a Lake Halley police officer and the Elk Mound chief of police. He lives in the village of Elk Mound. Travis Hakes, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome. And Mike Hankey is a former member of the Chippewa Falls City Council and a career military veteran with who served with the Wisconsin National Guard. He lives in Chippewa Falls. Mike Hankey, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Rob Summerfield is a small business owner from Bloomer and a member of the Bloomer Chamber of Commerce. Rob Summerfield, welcome to the West Side.
Thanks for having us.
And last but not least, Tony Zammit is the director of the Chippewa Valley Symphony. He lives in Chippewa Falls. Tony Zammit, welcome.
Thanks for having us, Rich.
Thank you. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. As I mentioned, the 67th Assembly District covers pretty much all of Chippewa County and a lot of Dunn County. So if you're in that area or if you're outside of the area, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615 to ask your candidates direct questions. You can also offer a comment. If you don't feel like going on the air, you can check out the West Side Facebook page and post there. We'll try to get your comments or questions on the air. So with that, I like to start out just by letting the candidates tell a little bit about why they're in this studio right now. So I'll start with you, Tony Zammit. Why do you want to represent the 67th State Assembly District, and what qualifies you for the job?
Well, I think when you look at, we've accomplished a lot in this state the last 6 years to make this a more business-friendly state. But at the same time, the average Wisconsin resident still makes $8,000 less than the average, household makes $8,000 less than the average Minnesota household. Mm-hmm. And in Dunn County, that's actually $11,000. I think if we're going to move forward into this 21st century, we need more 21st century industry and jobs that will keep more of our young people here. Any community's greatest resource is its people. And unfortunately, too many of our youth and college graduates in this area leave to go to the Twin Cities because of the opportunities that area provides. I'm a nonprofit executive director, but before that, I spent over a decade in Republican grassroots politics. I worked with Senator Norm Coleman, Governor Tim Pawlenty, and for the Republican National Committee. And so I have that experience when it comes to dealing with government, business leaders, and other officials to try to get things done.
Gotcha. I got to turn that off. Rob Summerfield, now to you. Why do you want to represent the 67th? Why do you want to take over for Tom Larson? And what are the qualifications you bring to the table?
Okay. My qualifications are with my business experience and being a UW Stell graduate, I feel that experience working with small businesses, doing budgets, hiring people is a great asset to have down in Madison. And I think using that experience, you know, can hopefully help help the economy in the 67th, you know, hopefully you create better paying jobs, creating more jobs and just growing the economy. I feel I, you know, with all this, my passion for how much I put into my life, my business, my family, my civic organizations, I feel just I would be a great asset for the residents of the 67th.
Travis Hakes, how about yourself? Why do you want the job of 67th State Assembly District Representative?
I think that it's important to remember that it's about public service. Right now, I work in public service nearly 60 hours a week, and in that job, I have to take people's complaints, people's questions, and use a common sense approach to solve their problems. And I think being a state legislator and a representative is no different. People will approach me with questions and comments and problems, and I'm going to try to solve them the best I can for them, but in Madison instead of, you know, just down the road from them now. And I think that it's also important to realize that as a police officer, I don't get days off. I work a pretty sporadic schedule, you know, and when I do get days off, like today, I took a vacation day and we had a death in the family, and I chose to be here so people could call and ask questions as opposed to attending that, you know, and I think another thing that's very important in our district is agriculture. Agriculture is a huge profession in the state of Wisconsin, and it's a big part of our assembly district, and I think that agriculture needs more of a voice in Madison, and I put myself through college milking cows, so my father works in agriculture still. So,
well, we appreciate having you here. Sorry to hear about the death in the family. Mike Hanke, your qualifications for 67th State Assembly District, and why do you want to take the job?
If I reflect back on what I've done in my life so far, upon retirement from the military, I was obviously in the Middle East for, you know, a few years, came home and decided to run for city council in Chippewa Falls. By doing so, I had great opportunities to make changes or help make changes with the city of Chippewa Falls. As examples, there was a very fair amount of infrastructure improvement to historic Chippewa Falls. Started and authorized the process of starting the new park down on the riverfront. We looked at building the new fire department, which we were able to get pushed through prior to deciding not to seek a third term for that office. The unique thing about all that, all the improvements, is that we actually done that in lower taxes. So we looked at the budget actually going up, although the tax rate going down. It's done through smart government. I am looking to represent the 67th Assembly in similar ways in Madison.
All right. Very good. Thank you all for that. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call for listeners. If you've got questions or comments for our Republican candidates here in the studio, these are all men who are hoping to take over for Tom Larson as the 67th State Assembly District Republican representative. 1-800-228-5615. Again, I'm joined by Tony Zammit, Rob Summerfield, Mike Hanke, and Travis Hakes. A federal judge in Madison has struck down parts of Wisconsin's voter ID law, specifically limits on early voting and what locations people can vote early at. The judge went a little further, though, in this decision, and they said that the Republican lawmakers who passed these changes were discriminating against minorities. Do you agree with the judge's decision on the early absentee voting ruling that they made? And I'll start with you, Mike Hanke.
If we take a look at, I did do some reading on that subject. I believe that there was another federal judge about a week prior made some changes. That particular judge prior to him being appointed was a 20-year senator from the state of Wisconsin as a Democrat. We take a look at this very recent change. There has been devices and a template set forward for people that cannot afford a voter ID. Anyone can go to the DMV and receive a free ID so they have the power to vote. Understanding this, in order to get that ID, there's documentation that you may need to have. And in the extremely minimal cases of these individuals where a birth certificate is untraceable, there are other ways that it can be done. Now, I believe this is an attempt to block what has been done to ensure that whomever votes. And it's quite ironic because if we take a look at the recent convention for Democrats in Philadelphia, in order to get in there, you had to show a photo ID in order to get in there. So it's almost a fallacy in part to where they're saying you need an ID to do this, but you don't need an ID to do that. So I personally do not agree with the blockage of that. There are ways for people to have free access to the polls. It has just it's almost a shame to where judges are now legislating where their responsibility is the safety and security.
So if I were to sum that up in a nutshell, the voter ID laws that were passed, you think are about election integrity, not trying to keep Democrats out of the
exactly.
polls.
Exactly. And what's so funny about all that is, you know, if they bring up one or two cases, I believe in the spring election, there was one or two cases where people could not vote. Mm-hmm. As far as we know, those people were going to vote for Republicans anyways.
Sure.
So there's no way to prove which way they were not going to vote.
All right. Travis Hakes, your thoughts on the voter ID rulings and just in general the rolling back of voter ID laws that were passed by Republicans, not just in Wisconsin.
I think that it's a good idea to have an ID to vote. I think it's a good mandate. You have to have an ID for almost everything nowadays. If you look like you're under 40 years old and you go to buy a pack of cigarettes or tobacco products, you get ID'd. You can't buy a case of beer without being ID'd. You can't drive a car without having photo identification with you. I think voting should be nonetheless, as you know, Hanke had said, there's easy ways for people to get photo IDs. As a matter of fact, I think through the Department of Transportation is one of the ways that they draw people to jury panels. You know, so if you're going to do your civic duty and vote, I think that you should do your civic duty and serve on a jury as well. And I think that it's a good idea. I mean, I know people from out of state who have told me, and I'm not going to say which party, but they have told me that they voted more than once for the same candidate in elections because they weren't required to produce photo identification. So, I mean, that's something that I've been personally told. And I think, again, I agree with Hanke that, you know, it keeps integrity in our voting system. And I think that it's important that people are who they say they are when they go to vote.
One of the, if I could follow up, one of the criticisms of that argument that, you know, you need an ID to vote for, you know, getting beer or whatever. People would say, or people have said, that is a privilege. The idea of voting is an inalienable right, if I can speak correctly today. But so what do you say to that counter?
I would say that it is a constitutional right to vote. There's a lot of things that are constitutional rights, you know, and I'm not going to get on a soapbox, but when you look at brewing beer or, you know, growing your own tobacco to make your own cigarettes, a lot of the products that you need, you still have to produce a photo identification.
Sure.
to produce those or to purchase those, you know, because our governments come to a sense where they tax us for a lot of things. And a lot of things that you need to do day to day, you have to have a photo identification.
All right. Rob Summerfield, your thoughts on the changes, the kind of rolling back the early voting registration deadlines that were passed by Republicans, and also the fact that the federal judge from a week ago said that people can vote now without an ID. They just have to sign an affidavit, giving good reason for that.
Yeah. Reading both the opinions the last 2 weeks, I've seen you're hoping that this is not an activist judge.
Mm-hmm.
Tongue-tied. I'm hoping that he's actually following Constitution, you know, to what it says.
Yeah.
This is going to end up at the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So I think to sit back, we kind of got to sit back and see how it goes. Saying that if we need to correct legislatively some of the concerns that they have addressed in the last two opinions, I think that's the legislature's responsibility to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to see next session, you know, maybe we do have to, you know, change it, tweak it a little bit. I mean, I know they don't like going back through the whole process again, but I think to make sure that it stands up to the courts is a very important part of the bill.
But you are supportive of the idea that you
should. Yeah, idea. You know, the integrity of your vote is the most important. But we also cannot disenfranchise voters.
Sure.
You know, I mean, if we're going to say you need a vote, we do have to make sure we set aside money to allow the poor, the elderly, the ones that do not have access, you know, to money to get votes. We make sure if they call, you know, call whatever office we decide to go with, mm-hmm. Hey, yes, we will get your ID.
Gotcha.
You know, we do have to make sure they are allowed.
And Tony Zammit, your thoughts on the voter ID decisions released by the two judges.
Well, I thought you kind of brought up an interesting point, Rich, and a lot of times the other side on this issue brings up the fact that voting is a right. But when you read the Constitution, what it says is one person, one vote. Mm-hmm. And all we're asking is for someone to prove that they are who they say they are and that they are only casting one ballot legally. I don't think that that's something outrageous to ask for. And I think that in regards to the decision, especially the one 2 weeks ago where the judge basically legislated from the bench, he rewrote the law to add in a provision for an affidavit. That's exactly what a judge isn't supposed to do. He's supposed to rule on whether something is constitutional or not constitutional, not try to rewrite the law to fit what he believes the Constitution says.
And this just came to the top of my head. Should there be other than – I mean, there are elections for state judges, and should there be penalties for judges that are – deemed to be legislating from the bench?
Well, I think, as you said, with state judges, we of course have the ballot box. Mm-hmm. And if the people of Wisconsin decide that those people are ruling in a nefarious way, they can always vote them out of office. I think with federal judges, we have to do a better job of holding, in the case of federal judges, the president and also Congress responsible for the people that get appointed.
All right. Michael Hanke, you wanted to – or Mike Hanke, you wanted to jump in too.
Yeah. I just want to follow up real quick.
Sure.
And not what my opponent said, but something that you mentioned was the constitutional right to be able to vote and showing a photo ID. You know, if that's the case and if that's the way that this country is going to take a stand on, does that mean that all constitutional rights – as an example, we look at the Second Amendment. Mm. In order for someone to purchase a firearm, they go through a background check, which makes sense. We want to ensure that criminals are not getting firearms. But in order to do that, I have to show a photo ID. You would have to show a photo ID. Similar situation, you know, mm-hmm. different amendments. Although, if you do it for one, you should be expected to do it for all. If you're going to make one not do it, then none should have to do it.
Travis Hicks.
Mike brings up a very good point, and I forgot to mention it earlier. When you do purchase a firearm and you fill out federal firearms licensing paperwork, whether it be a long gun or a handgun, you actually have to put your Wisconsin photo identification or driver's license number on that, and that gets called in to do your background check to make sure that you're legally able to purchase a firearm. Mm-hmm. So there's another example of a constitutional right that you actually have to have a form of photo identification.
With that, let's take our first break. We are we have four Republican candidates in the studio with me that are running for the 67th State Assembly District. Tom Larson has held that seat for almost 6 years now, and he's retiring from state politics at the end of the year. The candidates are Travis Hicks of Lake Halley, of Elk Mound, Mike Hanke of Chippewa Falls, Rob Summerfield of Bloomer, and Tony Zammit, also of Chippewa Falls. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in with your questions or comments. This is The West Side.
Support for WPR comes from Glassnickel Pizza. 18 years of employee and customer-inspired pizzas made from scratch at 8 Wisconsin locations. Dedicated to sustainability practices and community support. GlassnickelPizza.com.
You can have your own adventure at the historic Schlegelmilch House in Eau Claire Saturday, August 6th from 1 to 4 p.m. Enjoy self-guided tours of upstairs and down. Enjoy lawn games in the backyard and refreshments designed for a summer day. Details online at cvmuseum.com.
I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side 67th State Assembly Republican Primary Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm joined by four Republicans running to represent their friends and neighbors in the state legislature down at the state capitol in Madison. They are Travis Hicks of Elk Mound, Michael Hanke of Chippewa Falls, Rob Summerfield of Bloomer, and Tony Zammit of Chippewa Falls. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. That's 1-800-228-5615. One of the issues that is happening or is being raised in the 67th Assembly District is the issue of the nutrification of lakes, rivers, and streams. So near the heart of the 67th State Assembly District lies the Red Cedar River and Tainter Lake. For many decades, the river and Tainter have turned green with noxious algae each summer. The Red Cedar River cuts through the western edge of the district and flows into Tainter Lake. For many years, the river had severe algae blooms, toxic even to people and animals. As Ellery Lowry reports, those algae blooms lower the quality of water and can be harmful to plants, animals, and people.
Land use for agriculture. He went on to say that this isn't because farmers are irresponsibly managing their land, but because most of the land in the area is for agriculture use. So what else can be done to help Tainter Lake? Zur says the most important thing is getting water to infiltrate where it falls. If rain or other water can soak into the ground where it lands, this prevents runoff that carries phosphorus into the Red Cedar River and Tainter Lake. Residents in urban areas can plant rain gardens, filled with native plants in their yards or below downspouts, to help soak up water draining off rooftops. Farmers can plant cover crops to keep their soil in place. No-till farming is another way to reduce soil runoff. Zur says legislators can push back against laws limiting local control of shoreland zoning. He says Dunn County had a buffer ordinance in place requiring a strip of land between property and water. The state legislature passed Act 55 last year. This act prevented counties from enacting ordinances exceeding state shoreland zoning limits and overturned the Dunn County ordinance. Zur says he hopes state legislators will work against Act 55 to give more local control back to the counties. Zur and his colleagues will continue to educate the public on how they can help prevent these algae blooms. He says he hopes the 67th Assembly representative will help protect the water in their district. Ellery Lowry, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you, Ellery, and my apologies for cutting off the first half of that report. But basically, the issue is the DNR has found through many decades of study that there's too much nutrients, phosphorus, nitrogen, getting into the Red Cedar system. It's not just coming from farms. It's definitely also coming from private lawns. It's coming from private or public water treatment systems, you name it. So this is an issue that's not going away but anytime soon. So, Tony Zammit, I'll start with you, and then we'll go around the table again. Right now, people in that area, they're looking at farmer-led councils. They're addressing the situation. But at the time when the budget is tight, positions that oversee this whole project were threatened to be eliminated. So how does the state address the algae that's happening in Red Cedar and lakes all across the state?
I was about to say, it's not just the Red Cedar and Tainter Lake anymore. Last year, Lake Wissota had a major algae bloom, and there was a good month in late July, early August that the river was almost untenable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that first things first, I oppose Act 55 that the legislature passed last year. I think that we do better as a country and as a state when there's local control of issues. And if the people of Dunn County want to have stricter environmental regulations, they should be able to enact those. That's what federalism is all about and local control is all about. I think the best way that we can address the situation is to have the community work together on it. I think it's bringing together some of these environmental activists with the farmers and finding that middle ground. But I think that when you have property values, especially I know with Tainter Lake getting worse and worse every year, dropping vastly, mm-hmm. that really hurts the tax base.
And Rob Summerfield, your thoughts on what the state, or should the state do anything more to try to keep the nutrients out of these water bodies and also keep the algae from forming on the top?
Yeah, I think we need to work better with all the industries that are all the people that are involved, the residents, the farmers, the businesses, other entities that are involved with this. We need to come up with a good proposal to help alleviate this issue. I know doing doors up in Tainter, I mean, this is a big issue. And once we lose water quality, it's hard to get it back. So hopefully we can stop the tide. And then in the process, let's reverse it. We might have to invest as a state into, a couple different trials. Maybe take one section of the area and say, hey, there's this new technology coming out for stopping runoff. Hey, let's invest in that and see if that will work. It's going to be a process to do it. It's not going to happen overnight, but changes need to happen soon, because once we lose this water, we can't get it back.
All right, a little bit more state investment into the science surrounding the issue. Travis Hakes, your thoughts.
Well, as a state representative for the district, quality of life is our primary concern, and water is a number one primary focus on quality of life. I mean, when you look at early civilizations, they were based around waterways because you need water to survive. And I think that keeping our natural water sources as fresh as possible is a very important thing. You know, unfortunately, when you look at, you know, the western side and Tainer Lake and the Red Cedar, you know, we do have that algae bloom. When you look at Chippewa Falls, Chippewa Falls is home to some of the best groundwater in the world. I think that we need to try to figure out everything that we can do to ensure that the waterways stay clean for recreation, you know, for tourism, and then the people that live in the area. Obviously, it's a concern of theirs, and nobody wants to fish when they got to fight through algae to get someplace. You know, when your bait doesn't go into the water but yet sits on top because all the algae, it's not going to bring in the fishing tourism that it should. And I think that it's a very important thing. And one thing that we haven't discussed yet is I know that there's a push in the legislation to have the legislators possibly be in control of the groundwater and or privatize our groundwater systems. And I'm here to tell you right now, if I get elected on November 11th, that will not happen. I will fight very adamantly that we do not privatize any of our groundwater, and that if we work with legislation on a panel, it will have scientists involved, because whoever's in charge of our groundwater shouldn't be because they shook the most hands. It should be because they know what they're doing with it.
All right, Mike Hankey, any ideas on how to reduce the amount of algae or the nutrients going into these water bodies? What can the state do?
Well, about 2 months ago, I attended, there's a citizens community committee in Menominee, Cedar Falls area, that there's complete focus is this project. And what that citizens, that community, and on that committee have done over the past few years is phenomenal. They have taken and they have agreements with farmers. They talk to the neighbors. Surprisingly, when farmers, you know, do use applications of fertilizers, it's minimal. It's controlled by state laws. Most and quite a bit of contamination can happen right on the shores with people's own lawns.
Sure.
So it's using those chemicals responsible, as well as having agreements with the farmers and other agricultural entities that are in the area. The I believe key focus is when we look at local control is should the state government, you know, allow that power back. I believe, as most people do, yes. Although there are some consequences with that. When the state is solely responsible and when studies need to be completed, when you need to bring in professionals to do, say, you know, how is this going to affect it, does that mean that the state no longer pays that? And is that high-dollar ticket item going to fall back on the local township, village, or city? So, those, you know, it is a challenging question, although it's very refreshing to see where there are volunteer committees in Menominee, in Cedar Falls, in Tainer, that are taking this by the lead, and they have done a phenomenal job with it so far.
Yeah, we've heard good things from the farmer-led councils there. Travis Hakes, you had another thought?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what Mike said, that I think that volunteer organizations are going to help keep our budget down in solving this problem. When you look at a good friend of mine, C.J. Leinekugel, he spearheads Canoes for a Cause. And although it's in the 68th Assembly District, you know, the north side of Lake Wissota is in our district, and they work on cleaning up the Yellow River and Little Lake Wissota, and they get a group of volunteers out, and they take a Saturday and they pick up not just only, you know, pollution and rubbish, but we could look at, you know, if we have to go back and plant some natural grasses to help absorb some of that water runoff before it hits our waterways. I think using that as a platform, as well as, like Hankey had said, with some of the volunteer organizations, I think maybe the state could look at funding some of that, you know, and helping them out, maybe provide the seed if they're willing to provide the labor to make it a better environment for their neighborhood.
We've got callers on the line right now. We're going to go to Joan. She's in Eau Claire. Joan, you're on the air. Can you hear me?
Hi, yes. Good
thanks
morning.
Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, and good morning to your guests. Sorry for going back to a previous topic. I advocate for all Wisconsin citizens to be able to exercise their constitutional right to vote or to cast a ballot. Voting is a constitutional right. Gaining admittance to an airliner is not a right. Buying cigarettes is not a right. Buying beer is not a right. This voter ID law is in place to suppress the vote. It's voter suppression. not everyone can obtain that paperwork for that ID in an easy manner, and it's expensive as well.
Okay.
That's my comment, and I'd like you to thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you very much for the call, Joan. Thanks for the comment. Now let's go to Paul in Eau Claire. Paul, what's on your mind?
Yes, thank you for having me on the show, and thank you for your guests. In the 2015 biennium budget, the legislators took $100 million in payment towards the state debt, of which was $2.4 billion. And since then, the governor's announced that an additional $104 million will have to be taken out of the payment towards the budget because of shortfalls in the revenues. And this is coming in after there were enormous tax breaks that were given to basically the wealthiest people in the state. And you're cutting revenues to the K-12 technical schools and universities. And if I could get some feedback from your guests on whether or not they feel that this is fiscal responsibility. And I'll stay on the line if you have a question.
Sure. Thanks for that. We appreciate it, Paul. Let me start with the Rob Sommerfeld, and we'll just kind of jump around here. So the idea is, you know, these tax breaks were meant to spur the economy. Tax collections have been a little lower than projected or right at projected. And because of this, we've had a lot of cuts, and the governor has delayed some payments to debt service. So should the state lawmakers take a harder line on debt?
Yes, on debt. I mean, it's that's where, you know, my small business experience comes into play. We cannot keep on borrowing at this level. It just takes up the smart budgeting. But saying that, in the meantime, if you do to get through the next 6 months, just because we're in this past budget cycle, if you do have to do the short-term borrowing, that's something you have to do. But going into the next budget, we have to do a better job at budgeting the money that we have, rely less on borrowing, and work and live within our means of the revenues that we have.
All right. Tony Zammit.
I agree. I think that when it comes to borrowing, you really can't borrow your way to prosperity. And I think that while revenues have been lower, I think a lot of that has to do with the climate the first few years of Governor Walker's administration. There was a lot of doubt, and businesses tend not to go where there's doubt. But I think at the end of the day, what we need to do as a state is really sit down and reprioritize how we're spending our dollars and make a commitment that we're not going to be borrowing more of them to try to get ahead.
Travis Hakes, some payments have been delayed. There's borrowing going on for roads. Should the state look at, you know, raising taxes or fees, or should lawmakers just be more prudent with the money that they have?
Just to clarify, do you want me to answer his question about the school money, or do you want me to talk about transportation funds? Because
I was just in general, I'm talking about the borrowing.
I think that if we're going to borrow money, nobody ever wants to have to borrow money, but at the same time, a lot of people in the district like myself don't have $100,000 laying around to buy a house either. So, you know, unfortunately, everybody has to borrow some money from time to time, and that debt never goes away and it hangs over your head. You know, so we need to take care of it as soon as possible. I think that if we're going to borrow money, you know, if we're going to rob from Peter to pay Paul, so to speak, we got to make sure that Paul has it and that we're not going to leave Paul financially strapped or in a bad spot. With the school districts, I think that if we had to cut some funding and we cut it from the schools, if it's affecting the students and it's affecting the turnout and their day-to-day operations of the school, then I think that that's something that we need to put back in and we need to go back to. Transportation, I have a whole completely different outlook on.
We'll get to it. We'll get to it. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
So. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Travis. Mike Henke, your thoughts on the delayed payments and just the way the state is handling the budgets at this point?
Within a state budget, it is always challenging because if you look at a federal budget, when monies come short, you know, they have the availability of creating their own money. And any state, we don't have that. Mm-hmm. We have the only authority is what we take in, we can put out.
Right. We've also got the balanced budget.
Exactly.
Requirement.
So, yes. And so we are required to do that. Now, in a biennial budget, they are forecasted from 2 years previous. And then you're forecasting 2 years out. So you have a 4-year window where you're trying to almost imagine what, you know, what is our forecast in our state? What is our unemployment rate going to be in the next 2 to 3 years? What is our tourism going to be like? So there's a lot of characteristics that go in to creating that budget. And then the caller, you know, mentioned the K-12 with cuts that were made there. Well, in the 2017 budget that's coming up in biennial budget, there's an extra $200 million coming into our public schools that was not there previously. That was done through the same process. If we take a look at with our federal money, our school districts, I'll use Chippewa Falls as a good example. Chippewa Falls is the largest school district in the 67th Assembly. The national average of how much of a school system's budget comes from federal dollars is 8.5%. Chippewa receives 2%. Mm-hmm. If we look up in Holcomb, Cornell, I believe they're at 1% or less than 1%. Mm-hmm. So there's obviously with our education is extremely important. So there are and is more money coming in to the system in 2017, as well as with certain people wanting to offer free college. Right now, the federal government can't even pay for kindergarten. How are they going to pay for college? So, but getting back to the main topic of whatever you borrow, you have to pay back at interest. Mm-hmm. So we need to take a look at that. But again, with looking at a four-year window of the 2 years previous and the 2 years ahead, it's extremely challenging. And there are times when you're going to have to borrow to make the budget, although there needs to be provisions to pay that back.
With that, let's take our final break. We are getting close to the top of the hour, but we still have some time to ask questions and hear from our candidates. They are Tony Zammit of Chippewa Falls, Rob Summerfield of Bloomer, Mike Hankey of Chippewa Falls, and Travis Hakes of Elk Mound. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. They're all Republicans, and they're all seeking Tom Larson's 67th State Assembly District seat. This is The West Side.
WisconsinVote.org is your unbiased source for election information. Find voting resources, candidate profiles, and election news from Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television. It's all at WisconsinVote.org. Election information you can trust.
Support for WPR comes from the new Wollersheim Distillery, offering Coke Hard Brandy, Garden Gate Gin, and Dance Hall Absinthe Blanche. Wollersheim Distillery is a WPR Business Cornerstone sponsor, providing innovative multi-year funding for future programming.
The new musical production of Michael Perry's Population 485 at the Big Top Chautauqua will be the highlight of our new Big Top trip via Lamer's Motor Coach to Shawamigan Bay, August 28th and 29th. Read all about it at WPR.org/travel.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. For the rest of the hour, we're hosting a candidate forum with the Republicans running for the 67th State Assembly District. That district includes nearly all of Chippewa County and most of Dunn County. Some of the city's towns and villages include Ridgeland, Wheeler, Colfax, New Auburn, Bloomer, Jim Falls, Cornell, Cadott, and Holcomb. 800-228-5615. If you've got a question or a comment, we can try to squeeze you on the program. Right now, let's go to Willem in Colfax. He's been waiting for a while. Willem, you're on the air. We're getting close to the top of the hour, so if you could sum up your question, it would be appreciated.
Okay, I'll keep it brief. I was wondering about, you know, in light of your discussion about voter ID, I wonder if you would support a state-issued ID for everyone. And then the other question I had was, do you agree with the decision that high-capacity wells should not be a cumulative effect considered, like the number of high-capacity wells in a region, or do you agree with that or not?
Sure. All right. Thanks so much, Willem. Let's start with Mike Hankey. That's a two-parter, I guess.
Sure.
I think he was referring to the idea of a state-issued ID card for even for migrant workers or someone that may not be documented. The other issue, the high-capacity well, should the DNR be able to consider the impact of all the wells around it?
Well, pretty much reiterating what I had stated earlier about photo IDs is that in order to ensure that the people that do vote are constitutionally, you know, allowed to vote, mm-hmm. is that I don't believe that anyone that's here should just receive an ID. You need to prove that, A, you're a citizen of this nation, as well as a citizen of your neighborhood where you want to vote at. Again, that process has been paid for through our DMV. It is available at any local DMV office. If you do not have the proper documents, you have the time is there. If you go there at the last minute, obviously you have not prepared yourself. There's a personal responsibility level here. Mm-hmm. And then as far as part two of the question with the wells, if we take a look at, I believe that almost to a point where situation dictates. And what I mean by that is that if we take a look at Iron County up in northern Wisconsin, extremely rural area, mm-hmm. population is extremely low, they could handle, you know, multiple high-capacity wells possibly without doing any damage to natural resources. But now if we take a look at someplace in Eau Claire County, not so much. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on where it's at. The DNR has a great deal of control over this. It's obviously done through science. It's not done by guessing who can have one and who can't. Mm-hmm. So if we take a look at that, it just really depends on a situation.
All right, Travis Hakes, your thoughts on a state-issued ID for all and the idea of whether or not the DNR should be able to consider the science of many wells in one area versus just approving the permit.
In the interest of time, I'm going to say that I basically agree with Mr. Hanke. We have a ID available, and I think it costs $4 through the DMV if you do have to pay for it. For a state-issued ID, and he's absolutely right about the high-capacity wells. A high-capacity well, I think that, you know, the DNR and groundwater resource studies would show that in certain areas that they are acceptable in other areas. I don't want a business to put a high-capacity well into a neighborhood that's going to make the neighborhood's quality of water go down or maybe their water flow. So I think it's going to be a case-by-case study that needs to be done by scientists and not somebody for profit.
All right. And Robert Summerfield, your thoughts on these two questions, the IDs and the wells. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, jumping back on the ID point, with what I mentioned before, we need to set aside money as in the state. I know it's not going to be much that if people do have a economic hardship, mm-hmm. there's options to provide them for their option to get a photo ID to vote. I think it's a pretty simple fix. It won't take much money at all. And I think it's there's very few circumstances. So in the big scheme of things, I don't see it as a huge economic burden for the state. High-capacity wells. DNR needs to be very diligent on what they do, and they need to take in all the considerations that involve with each decision. I don't think you can have one decision for southeast Wisconsin that's the same as northwest Wisconsin, vice versa. Sure. So I think should be case-by-case scenario to take all the factors into each of the wells that they have issues with.
All right, and Tony Zammit.
I think that in regards to the state ID, I don't have a problem whatsoever with the state providing ID card free of charge to all of its citizens. I think in regards to the water issue, at the end of the day, it has to be a case-by-case basis and take a look at what the water situation is like in that area. I think we need to remember what's happened with our neighbor to the east in Wausau. 120 years ago, the water in Wausau was so pure and so good that they literally tried to bottle it and take it down to Chicago for the World's Fair. The people of Wausau fought them off with clubs. And 120 years later, they have to pull water or are trying to pull water out of Lake Michigan because through bad government policies in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, they basically depleted their water source.
And Waukesha or Wausau?
Waukesha.
Waukesha. Okay, I was wondering about that because that'd be a long play.
Yeah.
anyway,
sorry about that.
We're getting close to the top of the hour. One of the issues, and we've touched on it a little bit here, but if we could get real quick, K-12 funding, we've talked about the debt and how the state is handling the budget, but I want to talk about referendums. Holcomb School District, the Lake Holcomb School District, went to referendum in April, and before that they were saying to voters that if they weren't approved, if their referendum for more funding wasn't approved for operational expenses, that they'd have to dissolve the district, basically shut it down, and then the students would have to go to other places. So we're seeing more referendums, school districts passing referendums as a way to get more funding. Is this the proper way to fund schools, or should more state funding be allocated from Madison? And I'll go round robin, starting with Tony Zammit.
Well, let's be honest, there's always been school referendums. I think people sure. have used the latest batch of them to point a lot of fingers and try to play a lot with policy. But that being said, we do have to put more money into education. I think that in the 21st century, it's no longer good enough for the United States to be 27th in math and science. I think if we're going to compete with India and China in the century ahead, we have to improve our schools and we have to start here at the local level. So I believe that Madison needs to allocate more funding for schools, but at the same time demand higher accountability and more choice.
Okay, Rob Summerfield.
Yes, we need to continue investing smartly into the education of the state. With that investment, we'll pay dividends in the future, having a well-trained, educated workforce. But it also has to be smart investing. We can't just throw billions of dollars at everything and say, hey, just have money, go at it. Mm-hmm. It needs to be spent wisely. With referendums, I think it's a great tool to allow local communities to have local control. That's about as local control we can do is having these referendums. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, yes, I see a value in raising my taxes to pay for this, or no, I do not see the value in it. So I think that's a great tool to allow area school districts to raise revenue if they convince the voters that's the way to go.
And Travis Hakes.
In the interest of time, I'll keep it short again. I think that referendums, when you look at them across our district, you know, the school district of Bloomer recently had a referendum, and it actually got my dad out to vote in the presidential primary. Yeah. I'm not sure if he picked a presidential candidate, but he got out to vote in the school referendum, and that passed by less than 10 votes. You know, so when you look at the entire school district of Bloomer, now I would say more than, you know, 49%, 49.7% or whatever probably, their taxes are going to go up, and it's not something that they wanted. I think that as a whole, we need to look at how our money is spent in the K-12 school districts. I mean, when you look at when my parents went to school, they had a chalkboard and chalk. And, you know, when you look at every kid now has a computer and every kid has a smart tablet and a touch screen this and a touch screen that. And I'm not saying that that's not good for education, but at the same time, we need to figure out what we can do to get our kids the most highly educated for our dollar. You know, we need to have good students without, you know, crippling our budget, basically.
Yes. And Mike Hinkey, referendums as the method of raising more revenue for districts. We've always had it. We've seen more lately. Do you think that's voters sending a message?
Well, if we look at the most previous one with Lake Holcomb in the 67th, the families up there, if that would not have passed, would have been split between five different school districts. Mm-hmm. So you have these bonds been created by these young students to where they've been growing to school together for years, and all of a sudden they're going to be split five different ways. It would almost have been split in almost a second family in a sense. And then we also hear people, you know, hollering for local control. Well, we want to control. I as an individual, as a taxpayer, I would prefer if I knew that my taxes were going to go up by $50 or $100 a year, and if I had the option of those tax dollars just staying in the 67th in the schools here mm-hmm. versus my taxes going up identical, going to Madison and going to Milwaukee, and then them having the authority to decide, okay, I understand, Mike, that your taxes went up $50 or $100. What we're going to do is we're going to give $2 back to the 67th area schools, mm-hmm. and the other 98% we're going to send to other schools. I would much prefer to have that type of local control with the referendum, knowing that, first of all, it needs to be sold to the community as a need, not as a luxury. And number two, that, you know, when and if my taxes would go up because of the referendum, it's going to impact our backyards and not Milwaukee's backyards.
And with that, we've only got time for one more question, and I'm just going to pick randomly here. Donald Trump, the Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump, he's caught some criticism recently for comments about a Muslim Gold Star mother and father who lost their son in combat. It's just part of, you know, some of the ongoing question of whether he has a temperament to be president. I think voters would be curious to know whether you support Donald Trump for president and whether you think he's got the mindset to take that job. And I'll start with Mike Hinkey and go quickly if we can through the...
Yep. this point has actually come up quite a bit in the district. You know, you talk to so many different people. It's so large. And I do support Donald Trump. He is the conservative candidate that the people chose. I look at who do I want as an individual, as a father, as a grandfather. Who do I want to appoint the ninth Supreme Court justice? I take a look at myself as being a veteran of 20-plus years of what happened in Benghazi and Libya with our current administration turning their back on them and allowing them to die. I just have huge, huge issues who the Democrats have chosen. Many people said, we just don't know who to vote for this year, Mike. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of people that aren't happy with the choices. I just tell people, you know, you need to take a look inside of who do you want to be the policymaker? Who do you know for a fact that has shown trust or untrust in our system?
Travis Hicks.
I can tell you this. There is no way on God's green earth I will ever vote for Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
So with that being said, I think it's pretty clear who I support. You know, and I'm not going to take a stance of, like, her first commercial bashing the other candidate.
Sure.
But I'm just going to say that please, for everybody that's listening, do not vote for Hillary Clinton. It'll be dark times for us all.
Rob Summerfield.
Yes. Yeah, I've been very impressive with Mr. Trump with the pick of Mike Pence as a vice presidential. I think between the two candidates, Trump's got a better vision for the future. Yes, he's making a few mistakes, but I think if he gets a good team and with his announcements for the Supreme Court, I think it's been great for conservatives, and he's better than Hillary.
Tony Sammet.
I think at the end of the day, it comes down for me to Supreme Court justices.
Sure.
Donald Trump, I'll be completely honest, he wasn't my first choice. He wasn't my fifth choice for the Republican nominee. But at the end of the day, the next president will likely appoint one to three, we know at least one, but possibly three Supreme Court justices. And Donald Trump has already said who he would likely appoint. And so I think we have to stand by our nominee.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. That's our time. I'd like to thank our guests for their discussion. Travis Hakes, Mike Hankey, Rob Summerfield, and Tony Sammet. Best of luck to all of you in the primary. We'll see one of you back here in October. Also, a big thanks to Team Westside, including Ellery Lowry, Mort Cypress, and, of course, Debbie Brown and Dean Collenbeck. Next week, we'll bring on some party leaders from Western Wisconsin to discuss the primary and general elections in our state and region. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.